And also welcome the members to this very important meeting on budget hearing for the ICD. And of course, presenting their strategic plan. I also want to welcome the media people and any other person who is here. These are indeed open meetings and public is allowed to be with us here. The president declared 2010 as a year of action. And he said this time things will be done better, smarter and faster. As this meeting proceeds, we'll be more than willing to hear as to how the ICD is going to achieve this. But also in its stretch plan together with its budget, how is it incorporating other priorities of government, such as rural development and others, of course. Indeed, our meeting in Pretoria, this year early in February, highlighted some of the issues and responded to some of the questions that we had as the department. In fact, the ICT was presenting its then proposed budget. Today, we will be getting some confirmation on some of the things that were said then, or even changes if there are any. Let me appreciate the very fact that we received your presentation document sometime last week, and therefore members had enough time to prepare for this meeting, and I think that has to be appreciated. I further want to draw to your attention the fact that we have two items to be discussed in this meeting today. One is the ICT budget, but another one is a presentation by the department on the rank changes and so on. What this means is that we don't have the liberty of time and therefore will request first the presentation, the ICD to do its presentation, mindful of the fact that we don't have the liberty of time. But further, I will request members, as they ask questions, to really be asking questions and therefore being specific on their questions and not speeches this time. I will really be forced to stop members or even the ICD if the chairperson thinks that long time is taken, maybe on a question not being asked but a speech being given, then a question. It will not be because I want to undermine members, but it will be because we have to do our work the business way today. I think you know all of us, and I will hand over to the executive director to introduce his delegation, but go on to present the budget for ICT. Over to you.
Thank you, honourable members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I just want to introduce my delegation, Mr. Tommy Chabalala, to the left of me, head of Program 2. Ms. Susanna, well, she's been married, so she's now Ms. Mabuli. Ms. Mabuli from, I think, last week, she's Program 3. We've got an acting program manager for Program 1. Mr. Beloy is not well, so Mr. Machamela is standing in for him. Then we've got the office manager, Ms. Pretorius. We've got Ms. Verster, our CFO. This is our last official parliamentary engagement. She's retiring next month. And then we've got Mr. Moses Lamini in the middle, who's going to deal with the question of logistics in terms of the presentation. Chairperson, yes, I've looked at the time frame, and I think we will have to really move quickly. I think at the Kiewicz-Kruen event, we were very much in detail. I must just maybe indicate that page 77 of this presentation is replaced by a new page. Mr. Stad will speak to that when she addresses the committee, so apologies for that. Maybe just to indicate that in terms of the presentation and also a strategic plan that was tabled in Parliament, that the strategic plan was still compiled in terms of the current Treasury Regulation 522, which covers 3 years. We as a department take knowledge of the draft of the National Treasury on their website with regard to 5 years, as well as the question of the annual performance plan. We take note of that, and we will ensure that the annual performance plan is tabled in Parliament before the budget vote of the Minister on the 5th of May. So I just want to indicate that the presentation in terms of the 3 years is in terms of current Treasury regulations. In terms of our presentation, Chairperson, I'm going to just really deal with the main points in detail, because I think if I just going to stay with these issues, we're not going to come to the numbers and the figures, and I think that's really where the interest of the committee lies. In terms of the new legislation, as indicated, that is a major focus, and I think that also complicated the compilation of our strat plan, because on the one hand, we must look towards the next 3 years, but we must also look at the current year, our current program composition. Now, in terms of the guidelines of National Treasury, we focus on our current programs, although we've already indicated what is going to be our major focus areas. Now, we've indicated, I think, in our previous engagement that in terms of the revised activities and focus areas of the department, there will be a focus on more serious crimes committed by members of the South African Police Service, including the question of torture as well as rape by members, and also the question of systemic corruption referred by the Minister or by the Secretary of Police. So that in the next 3 years will become a major important focus area of our activities. Then also just to indicate that part of the aim of the new legislation is also to address those lacunas that the Portfolio Committee has indicated over the years. And that also includes to improve the management structure of the Directorate, to improve reporting and accountability practices in the Directorate. I think the products of the department have been under huge criticism, and I think it's still a work in progress, and we must try and get that right. And then very importantly, to establish a formal liaison mechanism between the Directorate and the Secretariat of Police. Then, Chairperson, the other issue I think that's been on the table for a long time is the streamlining of Program 2 and 3, whereby the complaints as well as the investigations will be in one program. That we also indicated that in our previous engagement. Then 1-4, very importantly, what we say is if we're going to get this new mandate in terms of more serious crimes, also systemic corruption, that means we will have to have the dedicated legal services to advise our investigators in the field, provide opinions, and also ensure that we act within the law. Liaison with the Secretariat of Police and stakeholders, I refer to that maybe just to indicate to the Portfolio Committee, since our last meeting, we already are in, let's say, finalisation of a draft service level agreement with the Public Protector, but that must go to my principal, the Minister, for approval in terms of handling service complaints that's coming from the public. So we're busy with that. We will also, as soon as that document is available, forward that to the Portfolio Committee. Then transfer of functions, we already spoke about that, that the function of research within the security cluster will move to the Secretariat of Police, although in the current strat plan it's still indicated as part of our program, and hopefully we'll be able to sort that out after the legislation. Then database and information services, I think that is also a major area where ICD should improve, and I think in terms of spend for the next financial year we should really try and focus on making good investment that we have the necessary tools to provide up-to-date real-time statistics on what's happening in the field in terms of our reporting, in terms of cases. I think that's currently a weakness within the organization, and I think the program manager will speak to that, where we are in terms of procuring the necessary bits. But I think that is the area we will have to improve a lot. Then in terms of the communication function, we said that is also an area that needs refocus, but again, the change of that function to the Office of the Executive Director will be dependent on what DPSA will say on our reorganization after the enactment of the new Act. Then access points, I think a major focus, especially the Chairperson referred to the rural areas, I think it's quite evident, for example, in the Western Cape, where we received a lot of complaints this last 3 weeks to a month in the Southern Cape. There is indeed a need for a satellite office in George. Also, in your own province, Chairperson, we've also indicated that there should also be a satellite office, and then also in Gauteng. So, you know, depending on the funding, that would be major focus areas. Then community awareness programs, and I think that was also in the past a real area of criticism. I think we should really up our game there. We should indicate to the committee where we're going to focus, what areas, what is going to be our link with community police forums, what's going to be our link with civil society, and also broaden our interaction there. Then, in terms of reports by the portfolio committee, I referred to that previously, I think at our last interaction, and we will monitor that in terms of the reports that was approved by the portfolio committee. Then, Chair, I'm going to end off by the current budget and the future budget. You will see in the presentation later that if you look at the trend currently, there is a decline in allocations to ICD if you compare it with the previous five-year cycle. So I think, importantly, that if we go to the legislative process, we should put on the table clear plans, programs that can be achievable, but will also be add value. So I think we can't just go out and say we need more money. We should indicate in our programs what are we going to do with the money, what is the current caseload of investigators. If we look at our priority areas, how can we reorganize? So, Chair, I'm going to stop there in terms of the time and immediately give over to Program 1.
Thanks, Mr. President and honorable members. In terms of Program 1, the main focus there is that the Program 1 is responsible for overall management of the ICD, as well as provision of support services to the children. There are about units, mental management, finance, assessment of language, training, and personal units, security, and ethics and risk management units within the program itself.
And in terms of staffing levels, currently the staff of the ICD is about 287, with about 16 vacancies currently. Although we are looking at increasing the staff based on the additional budget that we'll be getting. In terms of the employment equity status, currently we've got about 271 staff post-filled with 16 vacancies there. And out of the 271, we have a total females of about 133 and total males of about 138 in terms of trying to balance the issue of equity. But it must also, I have to also mention that in terms of our focus moving forward is that we want to try to strike a balance in terms of 50-50, you know, on terms of management. And we have identified that any positions that became vacant should be able to be filled by women. We have identified about 5 positions for this current financial year that we are going to be able to ensure that they are filled by women as well. And the issue of addressing the issue of disability as well, we have made a decision as a department that each province should appoint at least one person, disabled person, to ensure that at least the percentages in that regard is met. In terms of, I have to also lift the issue of disciplinary cases as well. We have about 5 employees for which were actually suspended due to serious allegations against them, and we are dealing with those particular cases. One being that the first one, he was actually charged for fraud, and this case currently now is with the appeal authority. It delayed because of the fact that the criminal case had to be finalized as well. That was the influence in terms of that. The second one, the case is currently in progress. We are continuing the disciplinary inquiry in that regard. The third one, we have just, at this time, we haven't identified a person, but currently we have identified the state attorney is going to assist us in dealing with it in Kimberley currently. And the fourth one, the hearing will be held during the end of this month. And the last one, the hearing is being held this week on the 18th as well. So we'll try to fast track these particular cases to make sure that they are not actually, you know, dragging for too long. In terms of measures to try to retain staff, we have identified areas where we do have a retention strategy in place. We have put interventions to ensure that there is career advancement and in terms of putting together training that will actually assist our employees to be able to upskill themselves. Crime resolving course that we have implemented this year. We offer employees bursaries as well as advance them to courses as well. In terms of promotion within internal promotion policy, our recruitment policy do make provision for that. We do have employee wellness program that offer resilience, especially to investigators who on an occasional basis need deep breathing as well. We do have grievance procedure and delegations in the department. Flexible working hours, we have implemented the policy as well. We have also have danger and standby allowances for investigators so that they are able to do their job. And we offer them also state subsidized motor vehicle scheme for investigators, and also overtime for investigators so that they are able to actually do their job. In terms of strategic objectives, you'll realize that most of the strategic objectives are similar to that one in terms of operational plan as well. The compliance issue in terms of 50% of women in top management and senior management have addressed the issue, that issue as well. To the retention of vacancy rate by 10%, reduction of debt, and also ensure that positions are filled within 3 months. Also, I must also just indicate that we also, in terms of, we have the ethics officer with dedicated ethics line to be able to deal with issues of corruption that are reported within the department as well. All those cases are actually investigated and action is taken about it. Some of these particular cases that I mentioned came through the dedicated line of ethics line as well. And also, as we indicated, that the compliance with minimum information security standard as well. We are currently trying to beef up the security component to make sure that we are able to comply with the requirements in terms of the MIS and those issues that have been identified by NIA in terms of ensuring that our buildings are safe as well. The operational annual performance plan, I'm not going to touch about that because in any case it's almost a repetition in terms of how we're going to deal with that over a period of 3 years on an incremental basis in terms of fixing the issues. Lastly, then, I've identified offices where we are. I know that last time our presentation was not really helpful where the offices are. Then I put together a slide with offices and so forth. I know that in terms of the issue relating to say, the telephone numbers and names of people and so forth, the program 3 will clarify those in terms of their brochures, where who can be contacted, where and how. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, our next speaker will be Mr. Chabalala, President 2.
Thank you, Chair. My focus will be briefly in terms of what we're going to be looking at in the next financial year, Chair, is the three classes that we're going to be concentrating on, which is class 1, investigations of death in police custody and as a result of police action, investigation of allegations of criminality, which is your class 3, and this is in line with the focus area that the executive director referred to. For instance, giving more attention to cases of torture, giving attention also to cases of rape and so forth. And then also referrals by the minister in respect of systemic cases of corruption that will be coming from each office. And as I've indicated during our last interaction, complaints of misconduct or service-related complaints will not be taken on a large scale, but rather only those that really are serious in nature will then be given attention. However, those complaints will still be monitored by us as the ICD as we refer them to the relevant police station and the relevant provincial commissioners. The next slide, Chairperson, deals with an investigation workflow. I felt it's also important that I just give an example of a case, an investigation, for instance, what steps that go through an investigation of death as a result of police action. As you can see, this involves your visiting of a crime scene, conducting an on-scene investigation, identification of witnesses and so forth, and family liaison, which is very critical in a case where somebody has been shot and killed. It's important that we make contact with the family so that the family knows who we are, that we will be investigating the matter, and that we will be then giving them progress, on a monthly basis or as and when there's new information that comes to the fore. And of course, I also felt that it's also critical that I give a costing of an investigation that I've just referred to, of a shooting, for instance. And if you can see, Chairperson, in terms of what the investigation more or less cost us, you'll see that we, in respect of investigating a death, we're looking at least 20,000, on average 20,354 that we spend on one investigation. So if you look at, for instance, the over the 450 cases that we are supposed to be, at least the minimum that we're supposed to be reaching, we're looking
salaries.
Yes, and this is without salaries, it's just operational costs. We're talking at least 9 million rands that will then be spent on 450 cases of death alone. And then obviously you'd also have to look at the fact that overall, the cases that we receive will take us, will take the whole operational budget that has been set aside, which is around 20 million rand, as that will be touched on by the CFO. Moving to the next area, Chairperson, I felt also it's important that I talk about the issue of quality control, because this is one area which is very, very critical. We have established what you call a monitoring and evaluation committee, which is the program manager 2 and program manager 3 are responsible for that. One of the things that we do is to visit the provinces. Not only do we receive the monthly reports from the officials, or from provincial heads, we also go to the provinces and physically go through the files as part and parcel of monitoring and evaluation to ensure that there is compliance with the standard operating procedures, and also to ensure that we meet the strategic objectives. And in areas, for instance, where we find that there are problems, we can then bring in interventions, timeously, to assist a province which is struggling. In terms of our what we're going to be doing in terms of our program for this MNE, is that we'll be rolling out the program from May up to October, and from that time on, we'll then be after October. What we'll then be doing is to look at those provinces which seem to be having some problems in terms of giving them support. The issues or the area of skills development is also something that we are putting in place. We have, we have service providers who are accredited by the CTAS to train our investigators. And also we have, working relationship with stakeholders like the SAPS, for instance, and the Department of Justice, who also assist us in terms of training interventions. We have an investigation conference which is scheduled for May, where we'll have all the investigators coming in. They'll be coming in two separate weeks because we do not want to affect operations in the province completely. During that, we'll be focusing on sexual offences, forensics, and pathology during this conference. Training on standard operating procedure is also very critical and will also be focused on, as you'll recall that I indicated that our SOP became operational in the current financial year in July. So, it's work in progress in that area. Stakeholder management, I've indicated also during our last interaction, Chairperson, that we have also identified the fact that it seems some of the municipal police services are not necessarily aware of the work that we do as the ICD. I mean, looking at the cases that we receive from them and when we interact with their management, it seems as if they are not aware what their obligations are and so forth. So we'll be rolling out a program where we'll be engaging with the senior management of the municipal police services, whereby we'll then be indicating to them what their obligations are and also coming up with protocols in terms of how they're supposed to report cases to us and so forth. There is also a protocol that currently regulates our relationship with the municipal police and the police. This gets reviewed on a quarterly basis during the meetings that we hold at the tripartite, the ICD, the TAPS, and the Municipal Police Service. This is also going to be a focus area where we'll be raising some of the issues that we picked up that seems to be problematic. Also, the issue of forensic science laboratory, I think we have also come to realize that some of the cases that get reported to us, because of the workload that the forensic science laboratory is experiencing, it is important that we get, you know, we foster a relationship such that we can facilitate some of the cases that get reported. Just to give you an example, you know, cases of rape which involves members of the police, it's important that these cases get dealt with as speedily as possible. Otherwise, you have allegations that we as the ICD could also be colluding with the police or covering up the police. And I must say that we have, you know, the working relationship with the forensic science laboratory has improved tremendously. We are able to pick up a phone and just indicate that, could you please prioritize this particular matter. The Department of Health also, given the fact that they've taken over the mortuaries, I mean, in the past we also experienced challenges whereby, you know, post-mortem reports were not finalized speedily. So this is an area also that we're looking at to ensure that we can improve our relationship with the Department of Health to ensure that not only are they final, I mean, they speed up the finalization of the report, but also you have instances where, you know, bodies are brought to the mortuaries, which of sometimes in some cases the ICD has not been notified, you know, of that particular death. So if we improve this relationship, we are sure that the mortuaries will then be also contacting us at the ICD to establish, are we aware of this death? And in the event that we are not aware, then our investigators can be dispatched timely.
How are you going to improve the relationship?
We are going to be setting up meetings. In terms of this province, for instance, we already have started with the Salt River Mortuary, and we have cases, for instance, where we've been alerted to where the police did not notify us, where they have been involved, the death was caused by the police, and we got members of the mortuary of Salt River, for instance, notifying us because of they've got our contact numbers. That's one area. But also in terms of ensuring that we meet with them on a quarterly basis. That's something that we're going to be doing at the same time. Areas of health and safety. We are also planning, Chairperson, to roll out to ensure that each and every investigator has access to a bulletproof vest. I mean, currently, officials are sharing. But we want to ensure that, for ensuring that at least each and every person has got a bulletproof that fits the size of their bodies, we are going to procure for the remaining investigators, and also to ensure that our investigators are compliant in terms of the Health and Safety Act. We will be procuring facial masks, surgical gloves, and post-mortem gowns, so that when they attend post-mortems, they are not exposed to this risk that are common in terms of this areas. My colleague spoke about the employee assistance program, which is very key. I mean, because of our investigators are exposed to they're exposed to the traumatic crime scenes, and it is important that they get the BD briefed. This employee assistance program is not in-house. It is rendered by an outside body, which also makes it important. It becomes key for our people to know that we're not monitoring this particular system, so they can be free that to communicate with the professionals that are manning this service. One of the areas that we're going to be looking at, Chairperson, is we have acknowledged that an issue of backlog cases that we're carrying over from the previous years has been a problem area. In terms of the monitoring and evaluation program that we've put in place, we're going to ensure that we monitor the performance and to ensure that we reduce our backlog. Especially our target is to bring it at least to 10% in the next coming financial year, Chairperson. You know, in the event that this doesn't happen, and obviously we'll see where is it that we're doing wrong. In conclusion, Chairperson, I would want to also assure this committee that the issue of uniformity is something that we're going to be ensuring that it's happening. And once again, it's the Monitoring and Evaluation Committee that is going to ensure that this happens. But also, it's important that we roll out the training of the SOP so that there is uniform understanding by our investigators of how the SOP needs to be applied. And of course, I've spoken about the issue of the improving of the performance and also the turnaround time. I would like to thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next speaker will be Mr. Nolotan
from Information Management and Research.
Thank you. Good morning, my suggestion is to have a set of objectives and measures, and then it will be strategic priorities and annual performance, and last it will be conclusion. So the first slide, which is 4.1, it's just showing you the objectives and measures. I've given you the indicators, and then I've also given you the target. And then when we go to the second slide, which is the strategic priorities, marketing and communication. We are going to increase the number of community awareness programs, especially in the rural areas, to reach specific targeted communities and numbers. Last time when we had an engagement with the members, there was a concern that we haven't done much in terms of marketing the rural areas. And I can assure the members that we've devised a plan for 2010 up to 11, where we've just targeted the communities. We are going to forward that plan to the chairperson so that the chairperson can forward it to all the members. Like in Mpumalanga, we've identified all those areas which we felt that we need to go and do presentation. By presentation, we mean the mandate of ICD and also for people to understand where are our offices. We are also going to respond promptly to media inquiries, community and regional radio stations. I would like also to state that when it comes to media, I think we've done very well, because if you look at the newspapers, in most cases you find that there is an article about ICD. It, not only in the newspapers, even when it comes to TV, and we've also engaged with other stakeholders. For example, the SABC is running a show where they're talking about Know Your Rights, where they've invited ICD there and the police to talk about the rights. So besides us going also to the media so that the media can understand us, but we do have an opportunity that the media now knows us. So if there are any cases of maybe, for example, police brutality, they normally contact us to find out about our views. We are also going to look at training other government programs, such as using visas and the 15-day campaign. When it comes to database, the ED has alluded to the fact that it's one of our major challenges at ICD. The current database that we have, it was developed in 1997, and right now it's no longer meeting our information needs. So we feel that it's important for us to look at this new case management system also in anticipation of this new act. We are still going to continue registering and allocating cases within 48 hours. And then when it comes to the station audits and self-inspections, we are going to increase the number of station audits, stations to be audited to determine the level of compliance with DVA. And also visit cells to identify cell conditions that are prone to inducing suicidal tendencies. And lastly, also to address such conditions jointly with the relevant staff management. With information technology, we are having a challenge when it comes to the staff retention, especially when it comes to IT. So we feel that we are going to put more focus on IT. We are going to review the IT organizational structure. We're also going to redesign the departmental website. We've done the groundwork, but unfortunately we're working closely with CETA, so we're depending on CETA to sort of finalize the website. We're also going to look at the development of intranet portal, and lastly, implement the disaster recovery plan. When it comes to research, with the research, we're only going to do internal research projects. By internal research projects, as we are anticipating this new act, we are going to focus on these three priorities that we've identified, which is rape, torture, and other serious police brutality. So
So our research will mainly focus on those three issues in preparation of this new act. Well, I think just to wrap up on my conclusion is to reiterate that we're going to look at effective community outreach targeting the rural areas, as I've just indicated, and also looking at the case management system. What we've done so far, we've managed to source three service providers, but unfortunately we had a challenge because two of those service providers were not BEE compliant, so we have to restart the whole process. We are going to enhance ICT capacity and rollout projects. If you check on page 35 of our strategic document, they say we've detailed our action plan, especially when it comes to IT, where we are saying that we are going to implement this new software. We are going also to complete infrastructure for satellite offices, because we do have other satellite offices we still need software. And then on rape-focused research in line with changes, I think I've alluded to that to say that we are looking at rape, torture, and serious police crimes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The final speaker from our side is the CFO, Ms. Pat.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. When looking at my content, my presentation will first of all linger on the action plan that the ICD has put in place to improve the findings of the AG. Then I'll give you various breakdowns of the 3 years allocation that we have received. And then that is per program, per office, as well as how it will influence the staff structure. And then I will also then just close on the effect that the new legislation can have if it's been approved on the current budget of the ICD. Chairperson, immediately when we received the finding of the AG last year, also with the appointment of the current ED, the permanent ED, he started the process of making contact with the AG's office with a view to get the interim audit steering committee together with members from the AG as well as from the National Treasury, that is specifically from the Accountant General's office, and then members of the ICD. The terms of reference of this committee was then firstly to meet bi-monthly to make sure that the action plan is developed by the ICD to improve on the findings, and then to verify that progress is indeed made. We had to present reports to the specific committee. They also assisted us in other problems that are identified during their audit, interim audit that commenced also in September last year. And then also the member from the Accountant General also assisted with financial activities. Chairperson, with that committee over looking our activities, our asset management component, which then at this stage now comprises 5 staff members, 3 of them started immediately with a roadshow to all the provincial offices and the satellite offices, and they took more or less 3 to 4 days per province to go there, first of all, to verify the existence of every asset, official asset, as well as the conditions of that asset. And they took with them the LOGIS system, so that they immediately were the taking also on board, perhaps most important, the training of the provincial staff members. They went with this provincial staff members and they verified the existence of the assets, the conditions, and then they registered those specific information onto the LOGIS system. If it was not registered, they did it. If there was wrong classifications, wrong pricing, whatever was wrong on the system, they then there and then corrected those LOGIS systems. They printed the asset reports for every office, and they made sure that the assets in per office is now correctly recorded in the LOGIS system. So also they were giving training, on-the-spot training to the people, so that when we left there, or when the component left there at the end of the week, those people from the provinces can now do their own changing of the logos. If there was additions that came, they procured additional assets, they could themselves register it onto the database. The same happened if they had to dispose of an asset. So we went right through all the provinces and rectified everything. The AG also confirmed in their interim audit when they visited the four or five provinces, they confirmed that there is now 100% compliance. Now back in national office, the big issue is now for us to get supporting documentation of all procurement done since the establishment of the ICD. So we have to get documentation filed according to our logos report per financial year, in order of procurement from the 1st of April until the end of March. We're currently busy with that. Our people are working 3 hours and more overtime every evening and over weekends to make sure that they get those documentation ready so that we can now, for the last 3 years, we have done the last 3 years up to now, and we can now give supporting documentation when the AG comes now at the end of the financial year. He would want to see the opening balance of the assets. That balance is now with a closing balance of the previous year. We have our supporting documents ready in terms of all the additions, in terms of all the disposals, in terms of the existing assets as they are in the provinces and in all the offices. So, Chairperson, I'm quite satisfied that this year we'll make it. If we don't make it, you can always call me back and kill me for that. But this year we are going to make it. It's on record, yes. Chairperson, when I look at the...
Can I request Mr. Dlamini to sit to the side so that Honorable Dube can come and join other members?
Okay. Sorry. No. I just thought. Sorry, Chairperson. Sorry, Madam. Right. Moving to the page 65. This is now the allocations as we have received them, Chairperson. We have received for next financial year, starting 1 April, 129 million. The next year, 144 million, and 152 million. I thought in the next slide, the following slide, I thought this might perhaps help. Yeah, that pie chart. I thought that would give you an indication that there's not really, although there is an increase, there's not a real increase in the budget. It is basically the cake has been divided into three parts for each year a piece. But if we look at the next slide, I have now taken that allocation for the 3 years. I've broken it down into the three programs. And I would like to start with program two. Tommy loved to say it's the most important program, the ICD. Program two is taking 49% of the budget, almost half of the total budget goes to program two. And then program one takes 38%. But let me come back to program two. Sorry, Chief. Program two starts with 49% and it grows to 49, almost 50% in the next year, and then it tapers down a little again to 48% for the third year. Program one stays on about 38%, so it stays continuously the same. The third year, it rises to 39%. Now, immediately you would ask, why is program one such a big chunk of the budget, more than a third of the budget? Now, bear in mind, in program one, we have the management. That is the office of the ED with its four incumbents, four staff members. It is the four chief directorates, or the four chief directors and PAs. They are sharing, some of them are sharing PAs, but it's the four chief directors. And then the ED that's forming the management, they are part of program one. Then furthermore, the funds allocated from or earmarked from public works for accommodation and leasing of buildings is also part of Program 1's expenditure. So that money that comes over from public works to our budget falls also into Program 1's budget. Furthermore, the ICD should also give one-tenth of a percent of its compensation budget to the SACITA training levy. So that is also, that training levy, which is almost 100,000, we'll come to that later, is also part of Program 1's budget. You can see Program 3 is the smaller of the programs. It decreases a little, you will not see it on this slide, but later on you will see it, because you would recall that we asked for the opening up of the call center. We have now decided with the new forthcoming legislation to leave the call center, not to continue with that, and to rather use that funding that was given for the call center for other purposes, especially in terms of Program 2, and then further to also put that with the Office of the ED and assist where necessary in the IT component as well. I took the next slide, gives you the same information that I've given you now, but I thought just to give you a picture of how it looks, you can see the dominance of Program 2, that purple, and then Program 1 at the bottom, and then the small part of Program 3 there on top. You can see how Program 2 increases. On page 69, Jefferson, I bring in now the current financial year 2009-10, just to give you an idea what is our current budget of 116. And now you can look, and I've put in the percentages, how every program is growing over the next 3 years. And you can see Program 2 is growing constantly at 13%, and then it tapers off a little. Program 1 grows this financial year with 13%, but then it tapers back to 10 and 10%. Program 3, as I've said, starts basically on a minus. It got less this coming year than it had this year because of the call center. We're taking away some of that. And then it rises a little again to 10 and 11%. Again, I'll start with a picture, Chairperson, to give the same information. Again, you can see the high yellow is Program 2, and then the small blue on the back side, and then the high administration budget here in the forefront, which is still not at Program 2's level. When I look at the next slide, page 71, Chairperson, I take now the current year's budget and only the next financial year's budget, just to show you the increase from the 1 year to the other per program, but also per staff. So you can see that the increase that we have received, this 12 to 13% increase, is mainly just compensation increase and inflationary increase. We had a little more in Program 1, and therefore you would see that we could add three posts there. And as the ED has indicated, initially we wanted to give it to the provinces, but we are holding back now with the filling of those posts until the ED can identify exactly where he would want those posts to be. But so far it's been placed in Program 1, where there is funding available. On the next slide, page 72, I give you a breakdown of the current budget as well as the next year's budget and how it influences the post structure per office. You can see national office currently is on 99. The provinces still take 55% of the budget. Next year it grows to 57% of the budget because we have given more money to their side, especially in terms of compensation, also for operational expenditure, as we've taken it back from the National Offices Program 3. Perhaps just to show you in the next slide, again my pictures, Chairperson, I thought to give you with this picture an indication of the high budget is specifically in KZN, you would see, and last year Gauteng, as well as the northwest, were the high spenders. Yeah, and this the next year it will be KZN, Gauteng, and the Free State. Now, I would have wanted that expenditure goes according to the number of cases being handled, but in this case, it's also still to do with the opening up of the satellite offices. You know, we still have to pay accommodation there for the first 3 years after opening. So it's, they are now in their second year. We'll still be paying from our budget accommodation. And in the fourth year, only Public Works will start giving money. So then Free State will decrease. You know, the satellite offices budget will taper down. And, yeah. Right. On the next page 74, Chairperson, I now go to the economic classification just to give you an idea again. It's a service department giving services and not selling services. Our compensation will be the highest. Our compensation is on 57% of the total budget. And then you can see goods and services. That is the operational expenditure. Is only rising by 9%. So you can see we've already tapered it down to less than the inflation is. Machinery and equipment, or the departmental agency, the transfer fees, it has increased because of the compensation increase. We have to pay more for that transfer. And then we have machinery and equipment at a 16% increase. Now, I'll show you just now where that specific item is going to expand. If you page over to page 75 and 76, but first 75, I break this economic classification now down into programs so that you can see exactly which program is doing what. Now, bear in mind, in program one, goods and services, is increasing by 15%. That is number one, public services, public works. Accommodation and accommodation that has to be paid from our own budget for the new satellite offices. So there is where most of our expenditure is going to. Then our departmental transfer fee has also increased by 14%. Compensation has increased by 12%. When we look at program two, you can see immediately goods and services have increased by 16%. You can see there the operational expenditure. We are giving them a little more leeway to travel more, to do more operations. And then machinery and equipment, that is exactly what Tommy has been speaking about. We've increased that by 28%. That is specifically for equipment. I'm thinking of investigative equipment, like the bulletproof vest, the jumpsuits, the gloves, the protective clothing that they need to wear at crime scenes and at the mortuary, etc.
5 minutes is remaining for you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Right, Program 3, Chairperson, you will see the only increase in Program 3 is machinery and equipment. Compensation is, bear in mind, the call center, we have started it halfway through the year. Now we have to cover the full year's salaries for those people that we're going to appoint in IT, etc. So that was the salary increase. Then furthermore, there are more office bound now. The only increase in machinery equipment is that we've put money aside for the IT people to start with that project of upgrading the database over the next 3 years. Chairperson, page 77, I am sorry. I made a mistake on the one that you have. I've distributed a new copy of the page. I just want to highlight those increases for you, the major increases. Communications, you will see it increased by 19%. It is mostly telephones, cell phones, DSTV, postal boxes, and telephone installations. When you open up a new office or when you move, you have to pay for that. That is taking a lot of our money. Lease payments, the next one is an increase of 15%. That is for public work, leases of our buildings, and the lease of photocopiers in every office. Owned and leasehold property, Chairperson, increases by 115%. That is specifically for the cleaning of offices, as well as fumigation, etc., and then for the securing of the offices. We've started the project, the current ED started the project about 2 months ago, that we need to get more cameras in our various offices to ensure a better securing of information as well as ICD assets. So that is where money is going towards. And then operating expenditure, Chairperson, this is specifically the printing of the annual report, the strategic plan, the various pamphlets. I think we have pamphlets now printed in all the languages. I'm not so sure, but and also for courier services. And then lastly, Chairperson, a new program started from the DPSA. They funded it in the past years, but this year, departments have to fund it itself. They call it the filler program. It is when a person gets ill and does not have sick leave available anymore. Then we have to pay a medical practitioner a specific amount of money to verify the situation of this person, whether we should give this person temporary disabled leave. And that is costing us currently a huge amount of money because we are paying this practitioner that is allocated to our department for the full year, depending on the number of people that we have on our staff establishment. We have also given it more money here because we expect to have more workshops next year with in line with the new legislation. We'll have to meet more stakeholders, community, etc. Yeah, Chairperson, then lastly, I just thought on page 78. This is over a period of 7 years. I've given you a picture of how our budget has developed from 2006 to, in the next 3 years, 2012-13. You would see the very first 2 years. At the top is the tall columns is the rand value, and then the bottom smaller columns is the percentage increase per year. And you would find the very first 2 years of these 7 years, our budget was increasing. But then, as from 2008-09, the increases started to decrease. And basically, although the budget is increasing, it is virtually decreasing in terms of the amount that is added. And then, Chairperson, lastly, and thank you for your time, if the new legislation should be approved in the coming financial year or in this calendar year, there's a few things that the ICD would have to consider because the budget will not be able to cater for the reorganizing of the personnel structure. If we need to streamline the investigative component and if there's more people to be added, I'm also thinking of the increase in reporting and accountability structures. In the provincial offices as well as in the national office, we would need money for that. And then, Chairperson, accessibility. We need those satellite offices, so that is something that should also be borne in mind. And then my last bullet, more community outreach. Especially when new legislation is in place, we will have to start all over to go out to the communities and to tell them about the ICD. I thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very, very much, and thank you for the presentation. Let me once more plead this member that we ask questions with just on the point and not speeches. Executive Director Saps will be a force now. We've been informed. And they have been increasing in their numbers over the years. And this is the plan of the ICD to it. Let me take home. Honorable Kolopana, Honorable Annelies, Honorable
Craig, Honorable Reverend, Honorable Schaefer. I'm sorry, Honorable NG, Honorable Ligeto, in that order. I don't think we're going to have a second round of asking questions, so let's ask questions, but please let us ask questions.
Thank you, Chair. The ICD, the finalization of investigations sits at 65% for the deaths in custody, for example. Now, I'm extremely concerned that the SATs don't actually automatically come to you. When I hear you're having to go to the morgue to ask them to come to you and say, actually, this death was because of police activity, what is the SATs thinking? They know it has to be investigated. And nowadays, they only comply with just 10% of your recommendations when you've thoroughly investigated the case. They seem to be treating your institution with increasing contempt. And I can't understand why the SAPs would want to protect criminality within its ranks. So I'm asking what your feel is of the matter. Why is it that the SAPs have taken this line that you are somehow the enemy, because that's how they're treating you? Secondly, I'm receiving any number of calls and emails for assistance in relation to police criminality, from police rape, certainly, to the other offences, such as not wearing name tags and then demanding bribes. That seems to be a particular problem in Gauteng, or calling for backup, hauling a woman out of a car, taking her off in handcuffs to jail. It was all there on carte blanche. I've had endless contact about the carte blanche program on Sunday night. Where do I go now? If you're going to be focusing primarily on the very serious crimes, the rapes, the murders, major criminality, where do we go? To the Secretariat? Do they have the ability to investigate that sort of abuse, where it is physical, but no one dies and no one's raped? And finally, I'm going to be keeping my fingers crossed about these promises of a clean audit report, and I wish you well in your retirement. And yes, we will come and haul you back if it's not a clean audit report. But I'd like to talk budget. The ICD is and has always and very deliberately been woefully, woefully underfunded. And we're looking at a paltry 129 million rand in relation to a SAPS budget of 6 billion. It's extraordinary that they have gone on a massive drive for new members, and yet still you are scrambling about with a few million trying to deal with increased criminality within the SAPS. I just don't see why you're being so shy in these increases. I mean, I don't think this is going to supply the country with the provincial offices and satellite offices that it actually needs, and indeed increased promotion to get the name of the ICD. Everybody says, where do I go? And they shouldn't have to do this. They should know immediately where you are, where your offices are, and who can help them in the face of this wave of police criminality. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, yes, just an explanation on the morgue, because I didn't understand that, quite understood it, that is where you go for a case, that the morgue is actually alerting you, that it's that you're part of the investigation at the morgue. That's what I understood, but if you can just give us an explanation on your involvement at the morgue. Jefferson, in terms of the satellite officers, etc., I would like to know why Gauteng at this stage, because Gauteng surely is geographically quite a small province. Yes, it makes up for quite a number of cases, but it's geographically small, and you've got your national anti-provincial office there already. Is there not other provinces that should be prioritized before Gauteng? And then where in Mpumalanga do you plan the other satellite office? I'm very worried and concerned about the suspension of a year and 5 months. I've heard the explanation of waiting for criminal charges. That is not the way I understand the Public Service Act to work in terms of suspension and disciplinary hearings internally. I don't believe you've got to wait for the court to find somebody guilty before you can actually fire them and finalize your disciplinary case. So can we get an explanation on that? Because, I mean, in an organization like the ICD, where human resource is a problem, surely we don't want to see people being suspended for 18 months plus. The vacancy rate of 10%, to get to a point at decrease the vacancy rate by 10%, surely this can't be an acceptable target. Why that little? Why are we not aiming to fill our vacancies quickly and as quickly as possible? I mean, it was one of the Auditor General's remarks against the ICD as well, that you've got long periods of time vacancy rates. You have a shortage of staff, but you don't fill your positions. And I'm really worried about this target of aiming for a 10% drop in vacancy rate. Surely we must go for much higher. Can we get an explanation on that, Dan? The Monitoring and Evaluation Committee. Is this going to be an ongoing process, or is there going to be a time limit to this? And is it really the most effective way of ensuring that SOPs are adhered to? Is it not possible to do proper training of your provincial staff? And once you are, we've heard that you are going to have a far better ICT system, et cetera, et cetera. Is it not possible also to conduct those sort of monitoring and evaluation processes via the IT system, where you can actually see whether a case officer is conducting the cases according to the standing operating procedures? Allocation of cases, program free, Chairperson. Can we get an explanation? You allocate the case to what level? The reason why I'm asking this question is, why is it necessary that cases be allocated from a national level? I can understand that you allocate the case towards a province, but surely if we are paying provincial managers, they should be the people, and they should be the people that allocate further to the investigators, because they should know best the caseload of the investigators. Is this not one of the inheritance of the centralization at the national level? Can we just get an explanation on that then as well? And then research. Chairperson, I hear what you said, that it's going to be focused on these three areas. What will be the purpose of this research? Because it's nice to do research, but research in the end got to mean something to somebody. And can we get an indication on that? In terms of the budget, last question, Chairperson, in terms of the budget, yes, it is still a small increase. I think what we need to do is, once we have the legislation in front of us, and once we see what the legislation entails, is that this committee should also then apply through what we can with the BRR report to make sure that this entity gets more money. But I think also we must be careful to create an impression that this entity is going to be the size of the police. And I think we also need to acknowledge that the police themselves are not shying away from dealing with criminal activities within. And can I ask just that the executive director just give us an indication? I'm a bit worried that the budget and the strategic plan, for me, is not future focused. And I think there is ways of doing so already, even though you don't have, because you are reprioritizing your priorities. And I don't see that this strategic plan and the budget is actually focusing on that reprioritization.
Thanks, Chairperson. My apologies for being a few minutes late. Firstly, and I also like to say thanks very much to Mr. Beckman for the kind wishes that I received. Thanks very much. I just a couple of points that I wanted to raise. The one relates to, and the Honourable Van Baker has raised it, but the issue of officers. I'm very worried that if you look at in provinces that are of a rural nature, some of the provinces there's no representation whatsoever. And why I express my concern is because I continuously hear of people who just don't know about the ICD. And you then ask yourself, in an urban province like Gauteng,
if people don't know how to access the ICD, don't even know what the ICD does, what happens in a rural province? What's going on in those areas? The question I then want to ask is, when you're making your representations to National Treasury, are you actually raising the correct things? You know, I used to serve on the Joint Budget Committee at one stage, and I know, well, my experience was that National Treasury will throw things out if they don't get valid reasons for an increase in budget. So I'm just wondering whether the case is really being put forward properly. Because I find it difficult that we wouldn't be able to be given sufficient funding to open offices that are desperately needed. So it's just a question that I'm asking, and that's a concern as well. The other area is in terms of Metro Police. How many cases are you investigating in terms of the Metro Police? Because one is often hearing about things that are going on, which Metro Police officers get up to, or allegedly get up to. And again, you know, one wonders whether the general public actually knows that they're able to take such incidents to the ICD. I think that's... Yeah, just the last point that I wanted to raise, it relates to the issue of bulletproof vests and so on. I mean, I find it quite surprising that in this current, you know, in the current era, that we still sit with a lack of equipment. Does that mean that when people go out to investigate cases, do they have the right equipment? Are we actually able to investigate efficiently? I'm a bit worried about that, and I'm wondering why we still sit now where two people have to share a bulletproof vest, if I understand correctly. I mean, I find that a bit unacceptable. So if we could just get some clarity on that. Thanks very much.
Honourable Reverend.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question regards to the departmental retention strategy. A number of measures are going to be looked at, if not introduced. So I want to know what is the current status when it comes to flexible working hours, housing allowance, medical aid, and overtime for investigators, because these are some of the things that you are going to focus on in order to retain staff. So what is the current policy on that? And the second question has to do with the criteria you'll be following as a guide to see, to check whether a case should be investigated or not. Page 39. Now, I want to know, you'll be looking at the capacity of the ICD, whether they can investigate a matter or not. Now, how long does that process take? Because many cases take too long to investigate. Now, if you talk about looking into the capacity of the ICD to investigate a matter, who does that and how long does it take? And does not impact on how long a case is going to take. And if the ICD does not have the capacity to investigate a case, who is it referred to if the ICD cannot do it? And the next one, regarding the items that have been procured and those that are planning to procure. There's a list of issue items here, bulletproof vests, jumpsuit and so on. What is the current status? How many do you have of these that are already procured? And how many still are you going to procure? Okay. And then my last one, looking at the budget of program 2, there's an increase of 13% annually from 2011 to 2010-11 to 2011-12-13-13, but 2012-13 is only 1%. Why such a big difference? When the budget was increasing by 13%, was it because you thought that the police needed to be kept in check because of the many complaints they're receiving? And are you hoping that 2012, that the police will be behaving, that you won't need to check on them, that you're only increasing the budget by 1%? Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Firstly, two questions on the Domestic Violence Act. Whenever you do your report, you do report on certain stations, and then 6 months later you report on different stations. There's no follow-up on what happened to those stations in the previous report. Is there no way you can change your report to indicate that? Because it seems you're going to do inspections at one station, they're not complying, then you report that they're not complying, and then nothing else happens until you get to them about 10 years later. Second question is, I still don't have any reason from RCD that makes any sense to me as to why, after being in effect for 10 years, the Domestic Violence Act still allows for people to be exempt from complying with it. What are the reasons you give that you allow people not to comply? What reasons do you give exemptions? And should that in fact be the case? Because after 10 years, I don't see any valid reason why police should not be complying with every single piece of that legislation. Did I hear Mr. Spurs say DSTV? And if so, why on earth does RCD need DSTV? And when do they get time to watch it? Mm-hmm. And what's happening with your building? We heard the other day that is that in the budget? And then just, I don't understand finances. I'm not a finance person. If the legislation is changed during the year and you now have more powers, What mechanism? I don't know. Honourable Annelies mentioned something about a report. What mechanism is there in place to actually get more money during the course of the year? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Though many of my questions are already asked, I'll focus on this one of vacant posts to say if you are retention strategy effective, because there was this 66 posts of whom resigned and some went into other departments. So is your retention strategy effective? And the other one is on the machinery and the equipment. I just want to know what type of machinery are you talking of in terms of your work? Yeah, I think I'm covered with the other. Thanks.
Thank you, Jefferson. I will give ICT 99%. They are the first to disclose to become accessible and public entity by on their presentation documents disclosing their physical address. The only thing that is outstanding here is the telephone number. Thanks so much, Chairperson. Honorable Van Zijk actually asked the question on suspension. But I just wanted to emphasize my observation that these suspensions, according to my observation, are based on rumors, personality clashes, because they take too long to be finalized. I want to find out from you what evidence do you seek to suspend a person? Because you cannot just suspend a person when you don't have facts. And how long is this particular person suspended? How long? My second question is, you're talking about outreach for communities. I haven't heard you saying anything about, because these communities They are sitting on a time bomb. They are the very same people who are not working. I haven't heard you mentioning any word about the very same unemployed, uneducated, those who are dropouts from school. What are you doing about that? Because you are a government-sponsored, funded institution. Government has committed itself to have unemployment by 2014. So this becomes critical, that this is a joint responsibility. Wherever you are, you must be thinking about that. 16 vacant posts are too many to me. When are you filling those posts? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the question, Executive Director. You have said you're going to improve your IT and database. Yet, according to this, your budget is decreasing. How are you going to do it when your budget is not increased? How are you going to achieve that? On the issue of, on page, I think this is page 44, forensic science lab for exhibits, I'm interested to know as to how much forensic investigations goes into your investigative work of ICD. That is, what is the feedback that you're receiving from the forensic laboratory? Are you getting results as and when you need them? Are there any delays? Is there any backlog on these cases? Your relationship with the Department of Health with regard to mortuaries, I'm still not satisfied. I think it's too casual. It can't be based on meetings, because it means a meeting in the Western Cape may come up with different agreements or resolutions from a meeting in Gauteng, blah, blah, blah. I would have expected something like maybe memorandum of understanding that will be binding to yourselves and the Department of Health. Otherwise, you're going to have disaster. You know, corpses in mortuaries are money. And if there isn't proper control, then I think we're going to have a problem. Autopsies, you know, people will not be burying their people because they'll be waiting for post-mortem and so on and so forth. So I expect that surely your relationship must definitely not be a casual one. I understand the fact that you will be submitting your performance plan sometime this year, but why? Why the plate? Why have you not submitted your performance plan now? Why later? Why not now? I just want also to ask, police have PolMed. Is there a medical scheme for ICT personnel? I'm just asking this question. Yes, is there one? Do you have any? According to the ENE, you said three provincial offices will receive three additional administrative staff, and which are those? And maybe my last question, because I think many of the questions have been asked, unless I'm leaving out one. Okay. The ICD bill, when exactly will it be tabled in Parliament, or Cabinet, then Parliament? Because we now want to work on, to come up with our own program. And as a portfolio committee, we have prioritized this bill. But we can only do that if we know exactly as to where it is and when is it coming to Parliament. Otherwise, we'll be thumbsucking things and we'll be disturbing our program as Parliament. So we definitely want to know at this stage that where it is and when is it coming before Parliament, so that we can plan as the Portfolio Committee. It is indeed in our interest as this Portfolio Committee to prioritize that bill. I am to ask the last question. Okay, on page 57, you said implementation of disaster recovery plan. Can I get some clarity as to what that means? But also on your internal research, I think the question has been asked by analysts, honourable analysts. But I just want to check from yourself, what informs your removal of research work from yourself to the Secretariat? What are the reasons? And do you? And I understand that you'll not be having a legal service, if I'm correct. And what informs these decisions? Why? And I'm not suggesting that they are wrong or right, but I want to be sure that they are thought of carefully and they are correct, and I can only hear that from your good self. Thank you. Can we allow you to respond to questions? Let me say here that we will only allow you to do that up to 20 past 11. So you have about 25 minutes to respond to questions. And if you've not covered all the questions, then we'll expect you to respond in writing. Huh? 20 past 11.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think it's excellent questions, and I think some of them are going to take some time, and I'll also ask my colleagues to come in the fields of specialization. And we'll try then to deal with all the questions. The first question from your side was that the SAPS is now a force. And it will be a force, and they've got increasing numbers. What is the implications for ICD? I think there's four principles. I think, and I previously also referred to that with regard to oversight institutions. When overseeing police agencies or agencies that deals with force, is the so-called Paris Principles, and that says there should be an oversight institution with the following four, let's say, elements. The one thing is it should be independent. Therefore, there shouldn't be influence from any body or any institution on that institution. That institution should be able on its own to make decisions, do investigations. Secondly, that institution should be well-resourced. Then, very importantly, it should be also able to report independently to a relevant legislature or parliament. So that is vital, and it should also have the necessary manpower and expertise and skills. And I think that is the four principles as we go forward with the new legislation as well. That should be the building blocks. I'm quite sure whatever the posture and doctrine of the South African police force will be, if we have that four elements in our, in our legislative mandate, as in the present Chapter 10 of the SAPS Act and in the new legislation, I'm quite confident that we will be able to deal with any matter that comes to us. So I think that is my view on that. I think the question also of the budget, I think there was various speakers that referred to that, and I think also Ms. Kolobarnas as well. I think again, one shouldn't be unscientific about the future. The bill should be properly costed by Treasury. There should be a proper job evaluation by DPSA about the needs of the department, what can we afford and not afford. And then we should make the final decision on what we will need to deal with our new mandate. Because I think it will be very unscientific to say, well, you're going to get now three more focus areas of serious crimes, questions of systemic corruption, and you need now X amount of further investigators. I think that should be a scientific process, and I think DPSA is the institution that is able to deal with it effectively. So I think one should wait for that process to ensure that we do it correctly. Then the question also, I think Ms. Kolobarnas,
Executive Director, I just want to hear you very well. Are you saying the bill should be costed by Treasury?
Well, in the end, the bill, of course, will have to be approved by Treasury. I mean, in terms of the processes, if we go forward, I mean, we will indicate in terms of the bill, there will be certain structures, certain posts
and that post and structures will have to be costed. And in the end, we will have to get the approval of Treasury for that. But part of that process also that DBSA must look from their point of view, is that function that we propose, is that correct for us? How should it be aligned? What should be the level? Should it be at senior investigator level? Should it be at deputy director level? And so on. So that process, I think, is very, very much important, you know, for us to move forward. Then I think there was also...
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah. I'm also worried about this because I believe in the end, it's not Treasury that decides. This committee decides whether the bill goes through or not. And this committee decides, and then based on the bill, it is this team sitting here, together with DPSA, playing a supportive role that must make those decisions. And we would expect when the bill comes to us, that a proper costing has been done already, because otherwise we're going to send the ball back, like we did with the fingerprinting legislation. So I'm also just worried about this.
Maybe I should take an example to explain. For example, say in this bill, we propose a chief directed legal services, because we believe in terms of a new mandate, we will need specific legal expertise and opinions for investigators when they investigate serious matters. Now, for instance, there won't be a referral in the bill with regard to the exact number of legal experts or legal people we need. That will only be done in consultation with DPSA, where they will say, well, that is more or less the broad structure you need, that's the number of posts. If you look at the public protector, you look at any other institution, that is more or less where we are. So the bill, of course, will, you know, give the broad guidelines, but the filling in of that is a secondary process, and I think that is vitally important to recognize that. Then I think, yeah, the question with regard, I think the chairperson also referred to the question regarding the annual performance plan. I've indicated at the start of the meeting, Chair, that the strategic plan currently was prepared in terms of the current Public Finance Act, in terms of the Regulation 5. Now, we as a department, of course, we will ensure that we subscribe to the draft Treasury guideline that was published last year in May in terms of providing an annual performance plan as well as a five-year plan. That is, I think, imperative that we should do it in the next year or two. But in terms of the annual performance plan, we will table that in terms of the prescripts before the budget vote of the minister. And as I've indicated, the budget vote of the minister, I think, is on the 5th or the 6th of May. And so during the month of April, we will table that document. So be assured we will comply with regard to that matter. I think there was also mention made of the question of cooperation with various institutions. I think the mortuaries, other institutions, and I think it's correct. I think it is not good enough just to say we're going to have meetings and engagements. There should be service level agreements, there should be memorandums of understanding, there should be a process. And I think that is one thing the top management will take today from the committee, and we will have to report back when we come back in September on what progress did we make with regard to that. Because, you know, it's easy to say we've got relations with the Department of Health or Mortuary, but there should be a set agenda and a set kind of cycle in which we do things. So I think that we take that we take that to heart, and thank you for that. Then also the other important point that was made in terms of disciplinary cases, I think it's vital. We should ensure that it is handled effectively. It shouldn't drag too long. The one problem is if it goes to the levels of senior management or is above post level 9 or 10, the problem is you can't really use senior management in your own department to deal with it. So it must be outsourced to other government departments or to private practitioners. And, for example, the presiding officers, if they are a private practitioner, they are in charge of that disciplinary hearing. And whether they allow, you know, extensions and postponements, that is within their power. So that is one thing. But I think in one or two cases, I think we could have improved in terms of the timelines, and I think that should be a important focus that we try and improve that. I don't think we should drag things on because it costs a lot of money also for the government, and also we don't get the service of that staff members. The chairperson also referred to the question of satellite offices, where should it be? I think in terms of, and I think Ms. van Wyk also referred to Gauteng, I think in a previous allocation, before I arrived at ICD, there was an allocation to all the provinces. Those three provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape, and Mpumalanga, was left out. So I think that is the reason why they still not been catered for. In terms of where exactly they should be, I mean, that I think that is that's the internal process, and I think also to take advice from stakeholders, you know, where exactly should that satellite office be. But I think in the case of Gauteng, I think the question is, you know, Gauteng has got now a population of almost 12 million people. If you look at the caseload of the Johannesburg office in terms of serious offences, if you look at the, you know, cases also in the bigger Far Pretoria area, we need to look at how can we improve our service delivery, because there's a huge volume of cases, and how do we deal with it effectively? So I think that is a valid point, and I think again we must look also at accessibility. So I think that's maybe a matter, if we get the money in future, to also discuss that matter with the portfolio committee. The question of the database, and you've indicated, Chair, there has been a decrease. Mr. Dlamini, maybe if you can just address that question, you know, in terms of the database, what is our, you know, in terms of our approach, what should be done now, the question of, you know, the service providers not being BE compliant at the station, but where we are currently.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. With regards to the database, what we've done is to try and limit the cost, is to do some of the work internally. For instance, the issues of user requirement specification, we've actually done that internally. We've consulted all of the users and got their input in terms of what should be in the database, what sort of capabilities and functionality should be in the database. And that has resulted in us reducing the cost of the total project. We've already engaged the service providers, and indications are at this stage that we should be able to accommodate the cost of the database within our budget. So, because of the work that we've already done. Had we not done that, we would have had to look at upwards of 5 million, but currently it will be less than a million.
That is reducing cost, but improving. Well, that is what you said. You said you're going to improve. Now, that is why we asked the question. You said you're going to improve this. And you are saying you've reduced costs, but you are improving the quality of your service.
Yes. We won't compromise on the functionality, Chair. What we are looking at, the new system will be capable of, for instance, notifying the complainants in terms of via SMS, for instance, if the progress of their cases. It will be capable of digitizing the evidence, for instance, the dockets. We'll be able to just scan them and put them in the database, so that should we lose the physical copy, we're able to just reconstruct the docket. That also helps with prevention of fraud. If it happens, you know, investigators lose dockets or they attempted to, you know, sell them, it will help us to mitigate that risk. But it will have a lot of functionality that the current one doesn't have. The reporting, especially the reporting, for us to be able to integrate certain technologies such as the global positioning facility, like your mapping, we should be able to look at a particular area and see in Johannesburg, these are the most prevalent complaints that we receive, and maybe zoom in, for instance, in terms of particular police stations. station and so on. So that is, it's a long-term project, but we will be able to get all the functionality that we are looking for without, with reduced cost, obviously, in terms of what we've done already.
But you're going to do that with this decreased budget? Sending out SMSs, that's the question. Sending out SMSs, that probably you're not doing now. And that's improving your service. But the budget, the cost, I would have expected that the cost will increase because of just that. What is it that you're doing now which you're not going to do, which will make you save, at the same time improve, and with this decreased budget?
Yeah, we currently, for instance, the complainants are updated, for instance, via telephone. And you would know that the cost of a telephone call is more than that of a SMS, for instance. So we are looking at reducing, for instance, the communication cost overall, but then maximizing the use of certain technologies like the SMS technology to then fund the expenditure as well. So, but we are looking at overall, if you look at the state plan, you will see that our IT plan involves other things such as video conferencing in the long term, which will allow us, for instance, if we use 30%, for instance, of the traveling and accommodation budget, we can be able to fund that technology. And then maybe in 3 years' time, we'll be able to reduce the traveling and accommodation budget by 30%. You know, so it's a bigger project.
Now, Chairperson, I think Ms. van Wyk asked also a very important question with regard to the strat plan speaking to the budget and we not really there. I think in an ideal world, in terms of the draft plan or let's say draft guidelines of the Treasury that must still be approved by Cabinet, they indicate that your first draft of your strat plan must already be lodged with Treasury in August and then your second draft in November, and then it comes to Parliament in February. I think that is maybe one of the difficulties we had this year because the ENE, I think, was finalized on the 15th or the 16th. And on the one hand, you want to focus on the future, but you must also take into consideration the whole question of your current programs. So I think if we move forward with the new legislation, hopefully if we can adopt that approach, I think it will also ensure that our strat plan speaks specifically to all the budget requirements. In terms of getting additional funds or financial assistance for the new financial year with regard to the legislation, of course there is the adjustments in October, but I think one must be realistic. If the legislation is adopted this year by Parliament, it will take some time. I mean, we will be able to fund maybe some posts, but the bulk of it will have to be in the next financial year. So I think one must be realistic. I think we are not saying, it will be possible. You know, we will have to look at what is viable. Also, in terms of our needs, in terms of the budgetary process, in August of this year, we should already indicate, Ms. Verstappen, you must correct me if I'm wrong, we must in August already indicate our priorities for the next year. So, if we know more or less where we are going to go in terms of the legislation, we can already in August give the necessary input to Treasury and say, okay, for the next part of that, it will look like that. Maybe just to indicate as well, in terms of the Treasury draft, this whole strategy document will be completely changed. If the new bill is accepted, we'll have to change this whole document. So this is really an interim document, speaking about the present and hopefully about the future. But this document is really an interim transition document. And hopefully we'll come to a situation where we can put really a 3 or 5 year plan on the table and say that's where we want to move. Chair, I just want to also give some of my colleagues, I think we've got 4 minutes left, Mr. Chabalala.
Thanks, Chair. I think quickly the question regarding notifications, why do we still have delays? I think the delays over the years in terms of notifying us about deaths in police custody as a result of police action have come down. You know, but you do still have those pockets of incidents, you know, one or two, for instance, in some provinces where police don't notify you in time. And unfortunately, it's in contravention of Section 53(8) of Chapter 10 of the South African Police Services. And we do have recourse in terms of obviously making recommendations against the station commissioner responsible. I think there was a question regarding other abuses that police do. I mean, other abuses that we as the ICD indicating are not going to be investigating going forward. This will be referred to the police station concerned, but we will monitor that investigation, you know, is taking place. I mean, we're talking about less serious, you know, cases. Because certainly we cannot deal with the capacity that we have and the focus that we're going to be taking. There's no way that we're going to be able to deal with all the complaints that come our way. We're going to be, we'll be setting ourselves to failure. The issue of the monitoring and evaluation, it's certainly a valid point. We're using the database as, you know, as we improve it. It is certainly going to give us, it's going to act as a tool that will assist us in terms of monitoring, you know, performance and also compliance with the strategic, sorry, with the standard operating procedure. But also, I think we need to take note of the fact that it's important that you need to go through the physical file, you know, see whether there is compliance. Because when you have the AG visiting the provinces, you know, to do performance information, auditing, they look at the physical files to see whether there is compliance. And unfortunately, you cannot rely on, you know, you can't sit in the office, at national office, and say there is definitely compliance. So at some point in time, there is a need for us to go out to the provinces and at least sample some of the cases. The provincial heads as well have got that responsibility to do to monitor performance and to ensure that there is compliance, you know, from their side. The issue of Metro Police, how many cases are we investigating? We have very handful. I mean, at this point in time, it's only cases, instances where, you know, deaths have occurred as a result of Metro Police action or in Metro Police custody. I mean, I'm talking a time when a person has been arrested and is taken to a police holding facility. Those are the instances that we've been dealing with. And I've spoken about the fact that we are going to be engaging, you know, the Metro Police because there are, indeed, there are cases of serious abuses which are not reported. And it boils down to the fact that, you know, the Metro Police, some of the Metro Police really are not aware of what obligations, you know, they have. In terms of oversight by the ICD. So that talks again to the issues of protocols, because of once we have a protocol in place, then you can tie these institutions to those particular protocols, and if they fail, then you can be able to take action against them. The issue of lack of equipment, indeed, I mean, I think what has been the case is we've had appointment of investigators in the last, I think the last procurement, for instance, was 3 years ago. And in the past 3 years, we've had new investigators coming on board. And unfortunately, those have not been, we have not bought equipment that, you know, for use by these new investigators. And that's the reason why we have a gap. There is now a need for us to be procuring for those investigators. I think going forward is to ensure that as and when new investigators are taken on board, we immediately procure equipment for those, so that we don't find ourselves, you know, with a backlog. A question regarding the criteria that we're going to be using in terms of investigating case, and I've spoken about the issue of seriousness of the case. One, it has to be a criminal case, and also cases, you know, class one, death in custody as a result of police action. But in terms of, you know, the period within which we will decide whether the case has to be investigated or not, we have what we call a case intake committee, which is provided for in terms of our standing operating procedure. The committee sits every 24 hours, or at the latest 48 hours, to deliberate on the cases, the complaints that come in, and they will then be able to take a decision to say, this is a case that falls within the criteria that we have set, and then it has to be investigated. Or if it's not investigated, it has to be monitored and it gets referred. So this So the turnaround time there will be at the most 48 hours. You know, I don't think that we should fear that there's going to be delays as a result of evaluation of those cases. I think that was the issue of processing of the exhibits. I think that's my final point here. The cases, the exhibits that we sent to the forensic science laboratory, unfortunately, they have to also fall into the queue as those of cases coming from the police. But we have had instances where, for instance, because of the high-profile nature of a case, because of its receiving media attention and so forth, we have engaged the head of the forensic science laboratory to get preference to speed up those investigations, and we've been successful in doing that. Thanks.
Before we move on, I have a huge problem with what you said a moment ago. You know, where then, you said if there are abuses by police, now you're going to refer it back to the police station. That's where the problem is. You know, we're seeing cops protecting cops, the knives and the rape. You're watching cops protecting cops. And we've always had this assurance that the ICD was the one unit people could go to. Now, if they're beaten up, it doesn't fall within your, they're not dead, they're not raped, who do they go to? You're not going to tell them they have to go back and be investigated by the very people who did it. So I have a huge problem with what's coming out here.
No, Chairperson, no, thank you very much. You see, I think one of the biggest problems that ICD is facing is the capacity to deal with the cases. When you're confronted with problems on the ground, you always have to refer them because you don't have capacity to address. And I thought that maybe in the deal that you have been talking about, you'll be answering the question that the chair raised about where is this bill, because that bill begin to give you powers. We cannot want to pretend as if we don't know what are the weaknesses that the ICD is faced with. Ours is to help you, in fact, to arrive at that capacity that you want. So therefore, the point that I want to ask you again is that why is it that you make mention of the Metro Police, that there are serious abuses that are not reported? Where do you get that information? If you say they're not reported, what is the problem? Because you make a very serious statement, and I want you to tell us which areas where there's been a problem with the particular areas of police. Because you see, you're dealing with a very abnormal situation which you are creating. The relationship between yourself and the police is one thing that must be honest. So that, you know, we are able to bring in a culture of compliance and respect of the Bill of Rights and the rights of detainees. I think that's what's supposed to be an area of our focus, rather than to be running around and telling people about where is the ICD. I think we need to put a lot of energy in making sure that police understand the rights of detainees, as much as we want to deal with the cases that are in fact happening. So I believe very strongly that the issue of the bill becomes very critical, Chad. That bill should come in, we should then look at the weaknesses within the ICD and enforce it, in fact. Because once the bill is before the committee understanding of problems, we'll be able to amend it as we want to make sure that we meet the needs to give teeth to this ICD. As it stands currently, does not have power. You see, and I don't want us to start to make this outcry. It is that these major problems, if we don't know how to handle them. To handle them is to go through that process that you have already started. So answer the question as to where is this bill, when do we expect it to be in Parliament, so that we can then prepare ourselves and be able to help you, in fact, arrive at the point that you are giving more powers now, rather than just, you know, doing this politics sometimes. It will not help us.
No. I think Mr. Chabalala should just then address Ms. Kalabana's question, but I can assure you if there's any misuse or improper police conduct, we'll look at it, I mean, in terms of the current act, be assured. Maybe just to indicate with regard to the bill, it's been indicated, I think, at our previous meeting that during the first quarter of this, this year, it will be tabled before Cabinet, hopefully. So, if that process will ensure, I'm confident that during this year it will come to you.
During this year. I mean, really, let me say this. 2010 is a very short year, with 265 days, but very short.
And like me, really, I'm sitting here. We also have to plan as this portfolio committee. We cannot plan if right now we still do not know as to when will the bill be tabled before cabinet so that it can come to parliament. If that is the case, what you're actually saying is that let us sit down and revisit our second session program and put things that we have removed in trying to accommodate this bill. That's what you are actually saying, and therefore put them to the third session. Because we have thought that coming back from Amman Easter, these bills will be in parliament and will be able to move on with those bills. But if you still do not, you're not very sure as to when this year, then we have too many other things that are a priority that we really can accommodate. I'm just asking this question, and I understand probably you will not give me dates. But we definitely need to know now. We have to plan. We can't work on assumptions. We can't suck. We also have a program to implement as the portfolio committee. And we don't wake up in the morning and say now it's the processing of this bill. No, we have to plan. I'm just saying that, and I'm emphasizing this so that if you've not put emphasis on this issue, please do. Go to cabinet, check, go to your ministers and ask them questions, these questions, so that we can also get these answers. Otherwise, we can't work on assumptions. It's 2010 now, and it's March now.
No, I'm not evading the question. I think in the Kibitz Kruan presentation, I put on a time slot where we ICD believe what should be the time slot in getting the bill accepted, but I mean it's within the prerogative of the Secretariat of Police by handling that matter. So, I mean, I think they will report you committee in the process. But we're quite eager to have it, in action as soon as possible.
Sorry, Chairperson, just on that, and there's another thing point that I wanted to raise earlier, but in terms of the bill, I mean, the Secretariat, when they made their presentation to the Portfolio Committee last week, they actually had the time frames, and they actually indicated to us when the bill would be submitted to going to Cabinet, when we would be getting it. So I don't think there's any confusion. They said it very clearly last week when the Secretariat came and presented their budget to us and their plan for this year. So I'm not too sure where the confusion comes. Why are we suddenly asking, where is the bill? It was presented to us last week, and we were told. The Chairperson, the other point that I'd raised my hand earlier while...
On the issue of the bill. I think they are on a line with the ICT again, but if they themselves, because they talk of transforming ICT, and that bill becomes quite very key. If they come to Parliament and say, we don't know where is the bill, and we ask them, we have the right to ask you that question, and you must be able to tell us, where is the bill? No matter even if we're told last week by the Secretariat that the process of, you're supposed to know that, because currently you are basing the transformation on that particular bill.
Yeah,
so you must always be vigilant.
Let me close that topic. Let me close the issue of the bill. What we are saying as the Portfolio Committee, if we must process this bill during the second session, then it must come before the Portfolio Committee. According to our program, we are prioritizing this bill. And I must say this, we are prioritizing this bill, that as we come back from our Easter period, we will be hoping that the bill by then will be before Parliament and we'll move on with the bill. It is in our interest that this bill be processed. And it is processed during the second session of Parliament, that is the next 3 months from April to June, so that when we close in June, if possible, we finalize the bill. It is in our interest as the Portfolio Committee, and we're closing the matter just today. He was on talking.
Yeah.
But we it's follow-up questions, please, members, and it's 1:30 already. I have to move on.
No, it is if I can continue then. Francois, in the presentation, indicated about answering questions about the annual performance plan. And he indicated that it would be tabled before the budget debate. But maybe we can just point out, Parliament rises next week. And we only come back in April, just before the budget vote debate. So it doesn't help us to get that annual performance plan just before the budget vote debate. We actually need it next week because we must prepare. And we are not here during the constituency period. So my appeal would be, could we please get that before we rise next week? Thanks very much.
Madam Chair, there are two questions. One has been covered because I was not getting the answer in the question report. The second one, I did not hear you very well on this issue. The second is, what is the implication of the police being for the report? But can we know? Because I think it has implications. If you don't want to open the matter,
in fact, it was in relation to the ICT, and I said that it in also the numbers of subs in prison and that was it.
Yes, I tried to answer it in saying, Chairperson, to indicate that there's really four elements that defines any oversight institution, and I'm confident in the current Police Act, Chapter 10, that four elements is there. We're able to do our job. If there's a change in the, let's say, nature of the police in terms of the, you know, the new naming, I mean, again, I think the principles will, the question would be, would we be able to, in terms of those four principles, do our job? I'm quite confident we will be able to do that. And I think that should be really the debate.
Chair, I haven't had my questions answered. I just want to make a proposal that perhaps there are quite a few questions that aren't answered, and could we please have those in writing?
Definitely. We have to close this session, unfortunately. Mr. Bukeman, are you properly resourced? Are you properly resourced?
Well, I think the department at this stage have enough resources to do its job. That's all.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. Today is the 23rd. No, it's 17th. Okay. Can we please get responses to questions that were not answered here, at least by the 7th of April. Are we close? No. By the 26th of March, which is next week, Friday.
Definitely a day before, because remember that there is no business in Parliament, so
by the 25th of March, which is Thursday. Email that to Jeremy, those responses of March, please. Thank you very much for our engagement with you and for the information that you've given to us. I don't know as to what is happening. We're still in a meeting. What we really want to hear is the practicality in your responses and in your presentation. Are things going to happen? Are things happening? We're looking forward to that, and we appreciate the strengthening of the ICT in terms of appointments, but we still want more. As this portfolio committee, we really will be in the near future be demanding for more. And as you have said, in terms of the legislation, that is why it is in our interest that we get that legislation before Parliament so that we can be in a position to move on with its processing. But also, indeed, we think that at some stage we'll have to, even if it is an ideal situation, to say if we were to do our work in an ideal world, this is what we think would work for us. Because that is important. If whether we're going to have that or we're not going to have it, but in an ideal world, this is what we think would make our work to be effective. I think it is important for us to get that. Police have a huge budget, and you have this small budget. I don't know, but
partner expected to still work within that budget. I'm not sure, but we definitely will have to hear from you at some stage and to say these are the challenges in terms of resources that we have. Talk about my area where I come from. People have no idea to what ICT is because there are no ICT offices. But these things are still happening and it becomes a problem. And that is why I'm saying at some stage it will be proper for us to sit, maybe to fantasize, it doesn't matter, to say if we were to do our work properly, this is what we'll need, these resources that we'll need, and the offices, the number of 1, 2, 3 offices that will be necessary. Thank you very much. There is tea, but we definitely are not going to break for tea. Members will be allowed to take tea, come back, sit, so that we have a working tea, and that will happen within 2 minutes, and therefore that is not tea time. The delegates together with the civilian secretariat of police and their delegation, following our budget hearing with the department, we got to understand, as the National Commissioner mentioned, that at least by the 1st of April, there will be change in the ranking of police. And based on that, we thought that it is important for the Portfolio Committee to immediately call for the police to come and brief it on this change. It is in that understanding and spirit that today we have this meeting. We thought it was important because there are constitutional matters that need to be clarified so that we know exactly as to what the change means, and it is for that reason that we have this meeting. Let me then thank the department for responding swiftly to that request that they are here today. I'm not very sure as to who is going to do the presentation or take us through, but surely you will know whether it is Commissioner, is it Kahlani, yes, or Miss Jeanette, Jenny, or Ramat, I don't know, but surely you know, you must have planned amongst yourselves. Because we don't have time, we are going to hand over to you. Let me say that at least we will be allowing you to do your presentation within 20 minutes. And after 20 minutes, the bell will ring and you will stop. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honourable members. Thank you for the opportunity to present the new rank structure. Divisional Commissioner Paslani will be taking us through the presentation.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, thanks. Because of time, let me immediately go into the presentation. Before you is the overview of the presentation. I'll talk to the strategic, the purpose, strategic focus, background, the new ranks, the insignia related, the implementation, as well as talk to some issues related to organizational and performance, personnel implications, financial implications, and how we will go about in communicating the process. The purpose, as Chair correctly indicated, is to inform the Honourable House of the new rank structure for the South African Police Service that will replace the current rank structure. And the strategic focus here is to ensure the realization of the department's objective to become a force in the fight against crime, and amongst others, to ensure the facilitation of career enhancement possibilities. Just for background purposes, the current rank structure was implemented effective from the 1st of December 2005. December 1995. Chair will recall that the entire SAPS management, including station commissioners, attended a meeting somewhere last year with the president of the Republic, who amongst others directed that we should look into ourselves for the purposes of ensuring service delivery improvement to our communities. And amongst others, the Honorable President expressed the need for the organization to be more disciplined in order to ensure a success in the fight of crime. And for protocol and command purposes, also to ensure mutual respect between SAPS and the South African National Defense Force, we have in this process adopted the ranks some similar to what are utilized by the SANDF. Those ranks will be familiar and will not create confusion amongst the employees. I think at this stage some of the ranks are sort of becoming a joke in how they are being used within the organization. The new rank structure will introduce two additional ranks, that of major as well as lieutenant. The major's rank will be between the rank of captain and superintendent, and you will have a new rank introduced between the rank of inspector and captain, which is that of lieutenant. The translation to the new ranks will have minor effect on current insignias. In the main, the current insignia will be retained. It's only in respect of two levels where there will be maybe a change. This is in this role is the current rank structure. For example, the police rank there is National Commissioner. The new rank, the National Commissioner will become a general, but he will retain the post title of National Commissioner. So that post title, which is also referred to in the constitution, remain. So there is no way that it is going to be affected. The deputy national commissioners their rank will become lieutenant general. Their post title will remain that of deputy national commissioner. The divisional commissioners will become lieutenant general. Their post title will remain divisional commissioner. Provincial commissioners will be lieutenant general, and the title, the post title will remain provincial commissioner. Here is basically what is the function, what are they appointed to do. So that is not going to be affected by the new rank structure. Currently we have the assistant commissioners will become major general, directors becomes brigadier, senior superintendent becomes colonel, superintendent, lieutenant, colonel, and then that's the new rank that we were talking of major, which comes in between the captain and the superintendent. Then we retain the captain as it is, just below captain. At this stage, captain is the first commissioned officer's rank. With the new rank, the commissioned officer will begin at the rank of lieutenant. So that is the new rank that is being introduced between inspector and captain. Then the inspector will become warrant officer, sergeant remains as sergeant, and constable remains as sergeant. And just on the side, is to make visible up to warrant officers, which is more at operational level than the main non-commissioned officers. And commissioned officers will start from lieutenant onwards. There, between lieutenant and captain, that junior management. Your middle management will be between major, lieutenant, colonel, and colonel. And then you have senior management there from brigadier onwards. This is basically the insignia. You will see there is definitely no change. The National Commissioner is currently carrying that insignia, cross sword, and the four cousins. It remains. This is the Deputy National Commissioner. This is the one area where it is going to be affected. All what is going away from their current insignia is the star, and they will be carrying that, which is the Lieutenant General insignia. This is the current insignia that is carried by the divisional commissioners as well as provincial commissioners, and they retain the same insignia, that of Lieutenant General. That's what the assistant commissioners are carrying. There is no change with the Major General's insignia. It remains the same. This is a director. Some of you who will know the rank structure within the military, it will be called Brigadier General in the military, but for policing it remains Brigadier, and is the same insignia which they will carry. That's the senior superintendent currently, same insignia which is being carried for colonel. That superintendent, which is becoming lieutenant colonel, same insignia. And the only other new one which is being introduced is the major, which is basically just the one captain. No change on captain, it remains the same. With the introduction of lieutenant, they carry two stars, which is also what we are introducing. Currently, the inspectors are carrying this insignia. You'll see police inspector. The new one is going to be warrant officer. This is where we are introducing something completely new, similar to what you find in the Defence Force and other agencies. The coat of arms with the rank warrant officer on it. And the sergeant, there is no change, and there is no change on constable level. Chairperson, the ranks structure within the South African Police Service are not regulated by the Constitution. They are not regulated by the Police Act, and therefore there are no implications to the Constitution at all. There are no implications in as far as the Police Act is concerned. The only place where you find the police rank is in the ranks is in the police regulations. These regulations, the authority to change lies with the minister. Regulation 8 of the South African Police Service. So it will be amended to reflect the new rank structure. It will be published in the Government Gazette. As Chair correctly indicated, implementation of the beginning of the 2010-2011 financial year, members will translate to the new ranks on equivalent level. So there is no one who is going to be disadvantaged or advantaged by this process. The one who is a captain will be a captain. Those who are currently superintendents will become lieutenant colonels, and senior superintendent will become colonel. So it's a horizontal a translation that is going to take place. As we have said, there are two new ranks. When we implement the 1st of April, we will not have people carrying these two ranks. They will be phased in with internal processes that are yet to be considered and approved by the National Commission. Those two ranks, we believe, Chair, will go a long way in creating additional career opportunities for members. At this stage, we have over 50,000 inspectors, and we believe that with the introduction of the new lieutenant rank, with the criteria that the National Commissioner will approve, we will be able to create some mobility so that...